Good evening and welcome back to another week of the Alaska Identity Project. My name is Adrienne Lopez, broadcasting on KTO News Juneau 104.3 in Alaska's capital. Be sure to stay tuned in the next hour as I speak with Alaska's Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell. And then later on, I'll be interviewing Julie Esty, Business Director for the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, organizing the Alaska Rural Energy Conference here in Juneau this week. You can participate in the show by writing in with questions for the guests. You can find Alaska Identity Project on Facebook, post a question there on my wall, or also follow the project on Twitter at Alaska ID Project. Mead Treadwell was elected as Alaska's Lieutenant Governor in November of 2010. He is committed to helping Governor Sean Parnell strengthen Alaska's economy by filling the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, facilitating a gas pipeline, bringing affordable energy to Alaskans, and standing up to the federal government to ensure access to our natural resources. A graduate of Yale University and the Harvard Business School, Treadwell brings a record of private and public sector success to his job as Lieutenant Governor. Lieutenant Governor Treadwell is recognized as one of the world's Arctic policy experts. Treadwell was appointed to the United States Arctic Research Commission by President George W. Bush in 2001 and then designated by the President as the Commission's chair in 2006. Under his leadership, a new United States Arctic policy was developed and adopted by President Bush and is now being implemented by the current Obama administration. Welcome to the show, Lieutenant Governor. Are you there?
That's great to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in. I know you're on the way back to Anchorage, but thanks for making the time to be on the show tonight.
Yeah, I'm at the airport, so if you hear announcements in the background, that's what that's all about.
Okay, great. Now, well, Lieutenant Governor, last week you were invited to attend the second International Arctic Forum titled The Arctic Territory of Dialogue in Arkhangelsk, Russia. First of all, can you start off by telling us how to pronounce the name of the city and then give us some background information on these Arctic forums and your role in the event?
Sure. The meeting was called Arkhangelsk.
Okay.
Out on the northern, probably about a three-hour flight north of Moscow, a little bit less than that.
Okay.
Arkhangelsk, for history purposes, is the place where we sent the Russian War. But dates back quite a bit in scientific history. Lomonosov was based there, and the northern Russia's northern university is based there.
Huh.
But, the Russian Geographic Society is headed by none other than Vladimir Putin, who convened this meeting. He convened the meeting, brought most of his cabinet ministers with any relationship to the Arctic, and that includes resources, environment, emergency situations, the head of the space agency, many governors, and ambassadors and others who work on Arctic issues from around the north. So it was a very, very interesting meeting.
Wow. Now, what were some of the highlights of the second International Arctic Forum? What kind of topics emerged as the most important to tackle?
Well, you know, I had an article in the Anchorage Daily News today, but there were three things that Alaskans should especially take notice of. First is the Russians have made it very clear that they intend to overtake Alaska. They have overtaken Alaska in Arctic oil development. Certainly in Arctic gas development so far. They started out the day a presentation by the head of the Academy of Sciences for the Arctic going through the Prudhoe Bay decline curve and basically showing that they're watching us pretty closely. The second thing Prime Minister Putin announced, which I thought was very significant for us, is that they intend to make the Northern Sea Route, that sea route, in the Arctic Ocean on the northern edge of Russia, as important to global commerce, as Putin put it, as the Suez Canal. And that means year-round service. That means buying 9 new icebreakers, including almost doubling the Russian icebreaker fleet. It means having much more flexible rates. It means developing emergency response centers. So they announced a large number of improvements that they're going to make to go into world commerce. And that, combined with their energy goals, is significant because they are beginning now. There have been several tanker loads of gas condensate, one of crude oil, in the last 2 years that are beginning to be shipped through the Bering Strait, past our front door, into markets in Asia.
Wow.
So the third thing that I thought was very significant, and I chaired a panel on safety in both aviation and shipping that lasted pretty much the entire second day. I started the first day right after Prime Minister Putin's efforts. But the panel talked about Aviation, and they're going after Northern Aviation in a very heavy way, and that's a competitive threat to Alaska as well as something that will help Alaska. So, yeah. In some other ways. So it was very, very interesting, all told.
Yeah. No, I was reading a quote from Russia's emergency minister, Sergei Shoigu, who was talking about climate change and anthropogenic or human impact on the environment, making the Arctic ecosystem very highly vulnerable, putting the region's sustainable development under threat. Was that topic addressed as well?
Well, it came up many different ways. Mm-hmm. As chair of the Arctic Research Commission, I pushed very hard during the International Polar Year to make sure that we have a sustained Arctic observing network. Putin, in his speech, talked about significant amounts of money that Russia's set aside to clean up old oil barrels that have been stacked in dumps in places like Franz Josef Land and Wrangel Island near Alaska. There was quite a bit of discussion of environmental protection.
Excellent. Good. That's one of my favorite topics. Now,
frankly, let me just say one other thing there. You know, when we talk about shipping, and if you take a look at Alaska's agenda on shipping, are we interested in ways to make energy cheaper for Alaskans or ways to bring our resources on the northwest coast to market? Absolutely. But, you know, at this point, if Russia is going to begin shipping supertankers through the Bering Strait in icy conditions and so forth, we're very interested in a series of reforms that we're trying to get through the Arctic Council for marine safety. And that includes making the search and rescue agreement that was just signed by Hillary Clinton work. It means getting an oil spill response agreement. It means what the Marine Exchange does right here in Juneau with automatic identification systems so we know what ships are where. It includes what we're doing to try to get an infrastructure study, the port study the state's doing. So we're doing a whole lot to prepare for this, what could be a massive change in the way that this ocean is used.
Mm. Now, who else in the governor's office and at the executive branch is also working on the Arctic issues besides you?
Well, I'd say that given the fact that most of our budget in the state comes from production of oil in the Arctic, over 90% of our budget comes from Prudhoe Bay, and given the fact that Alaska is one of six Arctic, the United States with Alaska is one of six of the eight Arctic nations working on oil and gas development in offshore in the Arctic mm-hmm. Ocean. I would say everybody, but very specifically, Randy Raro in the governor's office has been very active on the Arctic port study. The governor himself has been very active on challenging the federal government in terms of access to our lands. Commissioner Sullivan and his team at the Department of Natural Resources is very active in that. Commissioner Hartig is, and his team, Larry Dietrich from here in Juneau, is about to go to this Pan-Arctic meeting to try to negotiate an oil spill response agreement. We've had lots of activity from Fish and Game working on ocean policy issues and protection of the Arctic marine environment, which is one of the working groups of the Arctic Council. So I'd say that paying attention to our neighborhood is a cross-cutting goal in this administration.
Yeah, definitely. Now, on the other side of that is the legislature. What more can they do to advance Alaska's Arctic agenda that it isn't doing right now?
Well, the legislature's got this Northern Waters Task Force that they created 2 years ago, and the late Bill Knoll and I worked with several different legislators as that was drafted. That was before I even thought I was running for political office. And they've done a fantastic job, especially listening to communities on the west coast of Alaska and in the Aleutians, looking at things that we need to do to be ready. And so besides kind of adding another voice to our agenda, and this is an agenda that's bipartisan, Senator Begich and Senator Murkowski and Congressman Young are all pushing very hard with the governor and the rest of us to see that we have U.S. icebreakers. We're concerned about forward basing for the U.S. Coast Guard. But there are some other things that we need to be looking at here vis-a-vis the borders of Alaska and Canada and so forth. And I'm very glad that there's a group in the legislature that has decided to get very well educated on this.
Yeah, that's great. Now, there's also the Arctic Council, which is different from the Arctic International Forum, correct?
Sure.
Yeah, and I had a question from one of the listeners asking about Norway, Denmark, and Sweden have these common set of priorities for their chairmanships, and the question is asking about us taking over in the future in 2013, and if the U.S. and Canada should agree on some joint chair priorities for that chairmanship on the Arctic Council?
Yeah, Canada will be chair from 2013 to 15, and the U.S. will be chair from 2015 to 17. And I was meeting with the Canadian Council yesterday, the new Canadian Council's Peter Taylor, and he's been asked the same question, maybe even by the same listener. There's been a lot of discussion about this, especially in kind of non-governmental forums and so forth. And the fact is that the U.S. and Canada do have a large common agenda in the Arctic. We're very interested in safe, secure, reliable shipping. We're interested in security. We're interested in environmental protection. We're interested in making sure that we don't have introduced species in the north. I'm expecting that there will be some work. Former Juneau Mayor and former Lieutenant Governor Fran Ulmer is now chair of the Arctic Research Commission, and the commission will have a joint meeting with the Canadian Polar Commission in January in Washington, D.C. at the Canadian Embassy, which I hope to attend. So there's a lot of consultation back and forth across this border, and I'd say we work together on many different projects. Tonight, after I get off the airplane in Anchorage, I'm meeting with the scientists who've been out on a cruise of the Coast Guard icebreaker Healy, and that cruise has been a tandem cruise with a Canadian icebreaker, Canadian Coast Guard, and together we've been mapping areas that are significant to both a potential U.S. claim for extra territory under the law of the sea as well as the proposed Canadian claim. And that mapping is also helpful for us as we try to resolve our maritime border with Canada and the Beaufort Sea. So we're working together even where we, you know, technically disagree on something.
Yeah, and on that point, the Law of the Sea Treaty, we haven't ratified that with the UN Convention. Well, just so those out there, it's the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. And is there a likelihood that will happen this fall, that it's ratified by the U.S.?
You know, I thought it had a good shot this fall because Senator Kerry, who chairs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, was planning to hold a set of hearings this month. Those hearings got postponed, and you know, this is a place where Alaska can help make a difference. I am a conservative, and I'm proud of it. I know a lot of conservatives around the country who do not support ratification of the Law of the Sea. And I tell them, well, wait a second. I come from a state that has more coastline than the rest of the country. I also come from a state that in new territory offshore greater than California. The U.S. will get new territory twice the size of California as we ratify the Law of the Sea.
Was there anything else you wanted to wrap up on that point that we were...
I was just going to say it's in Alaska's interests, and I believe that the objections that opponents have to the Law of the Sea can be worked out through legislation. And that's why you've seen our governor support it. You saw our last governor, Sarah Palin, support it. And I'm hopeful that sometime we're going to be able to ratify and move forward with making our claim off Alaska.
Yeah, definitely. Now, another piece of the Arctic you've been involved with is something called the Arctic Imperative Conference. Could you just give us a little background about this and maybe how it's different from the Arctic Council?
Well, yeah. Think of the Arctic Council as almost like a student council, only it's the eight Arctic governments plus indigenous representative groups plus a number of observers. And it's a place where governments come together, and every 2 years the foreign minister, I mean this year Hillary Clinton, the first time as U.S. Secretary of State, went. But since 1991, there has been eight-nation Arctic cooperation on protecting the environment and sustainable development in the Arctic. And we've now gotten to the point where we are signing binding agreements like the one that was just signed, the first one was just signed on search and rescue.
Yeah.
And then besides that, because usually those meetings are very crowded, very full agenda, and not much time for anybody to talk, there are a number of conferences that are held in different places in the Arctic which bring people together to kind of talk through the issues. And I can tell you, I got a lot of Arctic Council work done in the margins of the meeting I just attended in Russia. But we had a group, the Alaska Dispatch and the Institute of the North and a number of others sponsored the Arctic Imperative Conference, which was a conference on Arctic investment in Girdwood this summer. And then there was this meeting in Russia, and then there was the Norwegians do a major Arctic conference, which I don't think I'm going to be able to go to in Tromsø, Norway, in January. And the point of that is, each of them have a specific focus. So the president mm-hmm. of Iceland hosts a group called the Northern Research Forum that was just meeting over Labor Day weekend in Iceland, which Fran Ulmer and a number of Alaskans went to. What was fascinating about the Arctic Imperative Conference is it brought together some of the major private equity players in the world. Alice Rogoff Rubenstein, who's head of the Alaska Dispatch, is married to David Rubenstein, who heads the Carlyle Group, a $100+ billion private equity group. And so there were a large number of people who work on finance there. And the question is the Arctic an emerging market in the same way that we used to talk about Korea or East Asia as an emerging market or countries in Africa? And the fact is, it is. I mean, if you take a look at what the ExxonMobil deal means in Russia, that means close to, Putin has estimated close to $300 billion of investment to make their shelf offshore productive. If you take a look at Alaska, we've got, the assessed value of the assets at Prudhoe Bay today is $16 billion. Well, in order to meet our governor's goal of, seeing the pipeline flow at 1 million barrels a day we're going to need at least $4 billion a year of investment, maybe doubling or tripling that $16 billion in the next decade or so. If you take a look at the cost of a gas pipeline, that's $40 or $50 billion. And I keep reminding people that, we'll have arguments with Washington about legal access to the Arctic. We'll have difficult investment decisions here on physical access or the ships or the roads to resources or that sort of thing. We'll push Arctic research and mapping to have intellectual access to know what's there and what's the environmental impact and how to protect it. But after all those things are done, those are the first word, they're not the last word. We still have to have an educated workforce and capital. We have to have access to labor and capital to make the Arctic opportunities work. And that's what the Arctic Imperative Conference was all about.
Now, will there be another one here in Alaska, or will this be something that goes and rotates places?
I actually hope it kind of becomes a Davos of Alaska, a Davos of the Arctic. I believe it will be a place where investors who are, if you take a look at the opportunities in shipping, the opportunities in fishing, the opportunities in oil and gas, the opportunities in tourism, I think this should be a place where people come to talk about the economic opportunities.
Yeah, sure. Now, you mentioned Iceland just a second ago. You're friends with President Grimson, is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah. What have you worked on with him between Alaska and Iceland, and what more could we collaborate on with that country?
Iceland was a bidder, at the same time Ormat was a bidder, to explore the geothermal potential of Mount Spur, a large volcano about 80 miles west of Anchorage. Iceland is very interested in partnering with Alaskans on geothermal development. They have an airline. They actually have had two global airlines have looked at bringing European air service into Alaska. So we've talked about that. I will say that President Grimson helped the United States think about having an Arctic policy. He and I traveled around and saw several presidential cabinet members during the Bush administration, and I've encouraged him to do the same thing in the Obama administration to make sure that people are aware of the value of Arctic cooperation. We hosted his Northern Research Forum here in Alaska a few years ago. And when he was here this time, he met with Governor Parnell and myself and a group of members of the cabinet. And we talked about a number of things which Icelandic industry can do and our governments working together can bring about. But a lot of it has to do with alternative energy, long-term low-cost energy from geothermal. We both are interested in seeing the hydrogen research being done by the Department of Energy continue. So it's things like that.
Yeah. Now, actually, you were at the Rural Energy Conference today. I saw you. You spoke, and then you listened to a lot of the concerns from all these different regions in Alaska. Was there something that stood out there today, or what was your message that you also took to the conference here in Juneau?
I think the message I took to the Rural Energy Conference is that the state policy now, whether it's we've got a goal of 50% renewables by 2025, we've got and we're going to make that goal not just by seeing the Susitna Dam built, but by seeing other projects move forward. We are also very interested. We're also very interested in seeing, investment continue and research and development continue. I talked about all those things. They're calling me an airplane now.
I can hear that background.
I'm probably going to need to sign off, and I really appreciate being invited onto the show. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Lieutenant Governor. I appreciate taking the time, and we understand you have to get on the plane. So we'll get you back on another show in the future when you're back in the town in Juneau.
Okay.
So thanks again. Bye.
Thank you.
That was Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell here on the Alaska Identity Project. Thanks for listening, and we will be back in the next half hour with Julie Estey, Business Director at the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. So stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Adrian Lopez here on the Alaska Identity Project, broadcasting on KTO News Juneau 104.3 in Alaska's capital city. Pretty good music. I've gotten a few texts and emails from people out there who really like this Polynesian South Pacific fusion group called Te Waka, which is actually going to be coming here to Juneau on October 16th. So if you're in the vicinity, in Southeast or in Juneau area, and you want to come, it'll be Sunday night, October 16th at the Juneau Douglas High School Auditorium, and you can buy tickets through the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. Again, that's Te Waka. We are back here with Julie Esty, who is the business director for the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. She graduated from Southern Methodist University with a BBA in Marketing and Organizational Management and a BS in Psychology. As the business director of the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, which is ACEP from now on, Julie is responsible for establishing and managing the business architecture of the center and developing and managing key relationships, including our business, media, and scientific partners and customers. Julie initially came to Alaska in 2002 to pursue her passion for dog mushing. She lives off the grid with her 19 sled dogs, wow, and husband in the hills of north of Fairbanks, where she can quickly escape to the trails with her dogs when she isn't at work.
Wow, can I do that?
Come on up.
It's not as easy to mush here in Juneau, I know, but absolutely, come on up. It's a lot of fun.
Well, it's a good hobby, so you just thought you would take it up and take care of 19 dogs.
It evolved a little more slowly than that, but yes, I was on a leave of absence actually from my corporate life in Chicago, and I found dog mushing, and I've never been back. It's an amazing sport.
Wow.
Yeah.
How exciting. So I'll have to put that one on the agenda for the future on my bucket list. Now, Julie, before we go into the Rural Energy Conference, which is what brought you here to Juneau this week, I'd just like to kind of talk about the background of the Alaska Center for Energy and Power and the organization or the center and its mission and objectives and what it's doing in Fairbanks.
ACEP is a fairly new organization, actually. It started in 2008, we're part of the University of Alaska Fairbanks system and under the Institute of Northern Engineering. So we're engineers at our base, but really energy is such a multidisciplinary topic that we leverage resources from around the university to help us solve energy problems. So, for instance, we're studying hydrokinetics and the impact of turbines in the water on the environment. So we've got fish biologists helping us study that. We're looking at geothermal resource potential, and so we've got geologists helping us study that. In addition, everything that has to do with energy is not only we're looking at what's technically feasible, but we also want to know what's economically feasible and what makes sense. And so we also work with folks down at the Institute of Social and Economic Research at UAA, looking at, you know, the economics of energy too, and also some folks looking at the social implications. So we really try to look around the university at the skills that are already available and put them to work on energy-related research projects. And really what we're trying to do is trying to make sure that the decision makers in Alaska have the information that they need to make the right decision. So we're not up putting up a wind turbine, but what we're going to study is how to make sure that wind turbine integrates well with our microgrids to make sure that we're actually generating power and offsetting diesel when we do put up a wind turbine. So that's kind of where ACEP plays a role in the energy landscape in Alaska.
So do they have a relationship with policymakers? You say they provide information, but is there any kind of lobbying that goes on?
We don't have a horse in the race as far as policy goes, but we do get called upon to answer questions for policymakers. So they may have there's all kinds of topics and all kinds of potential technologies that come down the pipe at us. And so looking at, you know, how do those make sense for Alaska? What are the implications of doing X over Y? So we'll be called on to provide testimony and things like that, but we do not advocate for policy at this point.
Okay. Yeah. Now, being part of UAF, how are the students involved with the center, if at all?
Students are essential. We're, again, a new program, so we're small, and so we really rely on our students to come in and play an important role in our projects. And that not only enables us to kind of grab hold of some of these young up-and-coming engineers and scientists, but also really provides Alaska then with a trained workforce coming out of our program that can work on projects. Last year we had a student come up and work on our hydrokinetic program, and then this year he was hired by one of the turbine developers, ORPC, and now he's an engineer working for them. So it's just an example of how we like to really involve our students, give them real tangible work, and make sure that they're set up well to enter the energy industry in the future. And we also really are focused on trying to make sure that we do provide curriculum when possible. We have a one-credit course that we've been doing throughout different energy hubs, Alaska hub villages. In fact, we've done one in Bethel and Nome and Kotzebue just recently. So trying to make sure, too, that there's opportunities to learn about all of these different innovative solutions, because it's really what's interesting to students right now. So, and we're really applied scientists, so we want to make sure we're working on things that are relevant to Alaska right now, that are real problems in the state.
Responding. So when you're out in those regional areas, did you get feedback on other did other ideas come out of some of that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're always constantly learning when we're out there. And that's really the value of a research institute is to, we go out there and say, here's what we've learned. And then we can get feedback from folks around the state that says, that's great, but what about this? Or this is really what we need to know next. And so we're constantly evolving as far as what our research agenda is and making sure that we are relevant, compelling, and answering the questions that need to be answered.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Great. Now, as business director, you're managing these relationships. What else does your job entail? Organizing this whole conference,
right? I'm really the person that's not doing research in this fabulous group. So I work with wonderful, smart engineers and other scientists, and they're doing the good work. So what my job is to make sure, one, that they're supported in their needs to do that work. I also manage the budget and do all the mundane business end of it, and I get to do the outreach component, too. So I make sure that what we are finding out is getting into the communities, getting into the curricula, making sure that it's not just sitting on a shelf that's been a study and now it's on a shelf, but it's actually getting out to the people who need it, to the decision makers. We also put on a lecture series in Fairbanks that's web streamed on third Tuesday of every month. So there's a lot of different components. And again, the essence of it all is just making sure our research is getting out there and being used.
Yeah, of course. Now, do you foresee a future role outside of Alaska at the center? Is there implications for research outside?
It's interesting because we really want to have an Alaska focus and focus on the things that are important to Alaska. Energy research in the past has been primarily funded at a federal level, which means that we're looking at questions that are interesting nationwide. And now that's a portion of our funding, but we really are trying to shift to a place where we are looking at things that are important to Alaska. But the cool thing is that Alaska can really be a leader in some of these energy solutions. For instance, we have a area of study called the Wind Diesel Application Center.
Yeah.
And looking at wind diesel hybrid systems, really Alaska is the leader in those when you look at that. So the National Renewable Energy Laboratory had a center similar to this and realized, you know, this really isn't on the national agenda, but it's critical importance to Alaska. And when you look then beyond Alaska's borders, beyond the nation's borders, at other remote power systems, not only in remote communities, but also for industry, mining, other, you know, resource extraction and other remote industries. There's a lot that Alaska then can be teaching the world about this. So there absolutely is potential for Alaska to take the lead, not only from some of our unique aspects, like how to integrate renewables on these small microgrids, but we also have resources that most countries are jealous of, you know, with not only our fossil fuels, but our renewable energy resources are unparalleled, really.
Yeah.
There's only a few countries that can really compete.
With Alaska.
You're right, as far as the breadth and depth of our energy resources.
Renewable, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit more in a while. Now, with the Rural Energy Conference, it's something that sounds like it's been going on for a little while. Why did it get going? Have you guys always been the leader in organizing it, and what are the objectives?
That has evolved as well. This was the seventh time that we put on the conference, and we do it every 18 months. So, you know, it's been going on for around 10 years now, and it was actually started by the Alaska Energy Authority, who is our partners in putting it on, and there was just a need to share all of this information that was going on. Projects were happening. There were lessons learned that needed to be shared throughout communities so that we weren't making the same mistakes, that we were spending money wisely. And AEA was putting a lot of funding out into projects to make rural energy solutions happen, and they wanted to be able to share all of the good things that were happening and help other people kind of leverage those resources and that, that learning. So they started the conference, and then our predecessor organization became involved as well from a university, the research component of it.
Okay.
So for the last 2 years, ASEP, again, since we're fairly new, we just got involved. AEA and ASEP have been partners in putting it on. And so ASEP's just taken the lead in organizing it, although AEA, there's a good number of folks from the AEA organization that sit on our organizing committee and really make sure the agenda is well informed and also help with logistics. So it really is a team effort.
Okay. Now, for those out there who might not know what AEA is, you know, and even me coming back to Alaska after being gone a while, I'm just trying to figure this all out, and I went to their webpage, but they seem to have a very important role, especially in all these issues of energy. Obviously.
Absolutely.
So maybe just a little side note, tell us what they do.
Yeah, so AEA is the Alaska Energy Authority, and they are a state run organization.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so they have a pretty broad mandate. As you said, they part of their PCE falls, portion of that falls under them. What I know them from, and I'm sure that somebody else can speak far more eloquently as far as what AEA, the breadth that AEA covers, but they really manage a lot of the funding for energy projects. They put in tank farms and diesel power plants and make sure that people have really smart energy solutions working in their communities. They also run the Renewable Energy Fund, which is a fund that the legislature started. Now we're going into the fourth year of that, which is projects to implement renewable energy solutions in a community. And this is kind of off-the-shelf shelf technology, commercialized things like wind wind turbines or biomass boilers, things that are proven in the marketplace.
Okay.
They also are now starting to run a new program called the Emerging Energy Technology Grant Fund, and that looks more on the horizon, looking at products that seem like a good idea but we're not quite sure about yet.
Okay.
So it allows the university to partner with communities or other industry partners to really look at, okay, this either works somewhere else or this is a potential energy solution.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try it out. So they're really managing all of these large programs and making sure that smart energy solutions are going into rural communities.
Yeah, that's a big challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work. I don't envy them for that. And so within, you know, that role, they're part of the Rural Energy Conference.
Rural
and
energy
it really has been an amazing success. We rotate it around every 18 months, and this is the first time we brought it to Southeast, so we're really excited to be here, and it's, it was a really great conference down here.
Yeah, so it started on Monday, just ended today, Thursday. It's a long
it's
amount
long.
Of time.
Officially, it was Tuesday to Thursday,
but
for the first time this year, we tried something called Energy 101, just to give people a primer. It was a free course. You could join it if you weren't part of the conference, and it was an afternoon of just basic energy information. So everything from the history of energy in Alaska to here's some basics about how power plants run in communities to here's what all the terms, like we define BTUs and kilowatt hours and you know, all of those things that if you're not really involved in energy, you wonder what it all means. And then they talked a little bit about policy as well. So it was a really good primer for folks. It was meant basically to give people the information they needed to come into the conference and all kind of come in with a baseline knowledge. So that was a pre-conference session. And then Sea Alaska also hosted us with a reception that evening showing off their biomass boiler, which was very cool. Good oysters from Cake. Fabulous.
Thank you,
Sea Alaska. And then we started in earnest on Tuesday. And we ended with we divided into regions at lunch today and had the regions connect in about what are the potential synergies that they have and common issues and potential solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And then the regional representatives reported to Lieutenant Governor Treadwell and the rest of the conference. And here's what we learned. Here's the issues that we're facing. And here's some ideas for moving forward.
Yeah. Now, starting with that part of it, was there something that struck you today that, I mean, I'm sure you do this every year, this regional kind of dialogue.
Right.
Was there some region that said something different today that maybe struck?
It was interesting. I think the more interesting thing to me wasn't necessarily what each individual region said, but almost more the commonalities between the regions, that even though everybody is so different and facing different circumstances and different, they have different resource potentials, different politics. It's amazing how similar the issues are. You know, one is the limited amount of capital to really invest in good or new energy solutions. You know, that's always an issue. Another one is permitting and regulations and how we can maybe break through some of the barriers and how Alaska's unique in a lot of ways. For instance, some of our hydrokinetic turbines, which are turbines not hydro dam, like a dammed situation, but where there's a turbine spinning in the water just in the run of the river, so there's no need to block it or create a dam. But we're starting to experiment with some of those devices in Alaska waters. But to do that, you have to go through the same process as if you were building a huge megawatt dam. And there's different issues. And so talking through how Alaska is different and maybe where we can work through some of those regulation challenges. Because the other thing that we're finding is going through those permitting processes, it's expensive. And for good reason. There's good reasons why regulations and permits are required. But the process itself is expensive and really built for large-scale power systems. Yeah. But when you're looking at doing those same studies and investigations and permitting for a smaller energy project, it's hard to make the numbers work out. I mean, you're spending half of your funds to make sure that all of this, the studies and permits are done. And so, and again, all of that's important. I don't want to minimize that, but really can be a deal breaker for some projects. And so working, it's important for us as a state to look at, you know, what can we be doing to, one, make sure that those regulations that are necessary are in place, but then how there can be possible flexibility for the recognition that Alaska is different and some of these solutions are different.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, I heard that comment, not having gone to any energy conferences in my life, somebody said, well, this one is different because it's rural, and that's a key piece here.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Energy, it's talking about the rural issues, which just doesn't always get talked about in other conferences.
Yeah, and that was interesting, too, is we had folks say, you know, why is it the Rural Energy Conference? Because really, when you look at our agenda, we span energy concepts from rural to rail belt to conceptual.
Yeah, yeah.
We look beyond Alaska's borders at what's working in other places. So, but energy is kind of a loaded term in Alaska. You know, usually when you say an energy conference, people, at least statewide, think, resource extraction energy, you know, and but... So this energy conference is really focused on remote power solutions. So the generation, we also look at end use efficiency because everybody has recognized that, you know, it doesn't do you a lot of good to put in some new innovative energy technique or solution if you're not going to look at how much you're using at the end of it, at the end of the day. The cheapest energy is energy you're not using.
Energy efficiency.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so we look at both ends of that spectrum. And then we also look at efficiency on the power generation side. So right now, I mean, diesel is a primary source of generation throughout rural Alaska, especially. And so the quickest thing that we can do to improve that situation is increase the efficiency of those diesel engines. And so by doing that, that way you can offset more diesel without a huge capital investment. So there's different solutions of just even making that efficient. And that's a great start for rural Alaska, really, because if you can start reducing that number of diesel, even if it's percentage, you know, small percentage points, it makes a difference as far as rates and how much diesel a community has to fly in some circumstances.
Of course. Now, that was a topic on one of the days, right? An agenda topic, a second topic.
Yeah, we cover a little bit of everything. And this year was interesting because we really wanted to look at Southeast energy issues. In the past, when we looked at our figures from last year's conference, which was held in Fairbanks, and there was, I think, 3% of the attendees were from Southeast.
Wow.
So it had not necessarily been something that we looked at as far as making sure that Southeast issues were in the agenda. Mm. When we decided to bring it to Juneau, we thought, we need to start paying attention to the issues that Southeast communities are facing. And you know, I think there's a tendency to generalize. You know, we're up in Fairbanks and get, oh, those folks down in Southeast, they've got it easy, they've got hydro. But I think it was a great thing to come here and really focus on Southeast issues, Southeast speakers, because we really did get a great perspective from, hydro is fabulous, but there's a lot of issues even with that, and the rural communities are still struggling, just the same as they are everywhere else. And so I think it was a great perspective setting time for everybody at the conference.
For sure. And you see the cost of power is what's driving a lot of this, too, or the cost of energy.
Absolutely.
In these rural communities.
Yep.
And, you know, now living in the Southeast versus where I grew up in Valdez, you see that the Tongass is a huge issue. It's owned by the federal government.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if other Alaskans know that.
Right.
They come here and they learn
that. The percentage of federal land that's here in Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's really where permitting kind of rose up, is we need to talk about this because it's such a big issue in Southeast. But then when we started looking throughout Alaska, yes, permitting is a huge issue here, and it's also an issue in, you know, in the Southeast or in Southwest and the North and Interior. I mean, it's really an issue everywhere. So where the other thing that a comment that another attendee who has been to several conferences made is, you know, before we were talking about this and we were kind of all over the map, kind of scattershot as far as the solutions. But now we seem to be have a little bit more focus and that we agree on a general direction of things that make sense, maybe some things that don't, and where we need to go. And so that's another thing I think that struck me about the conference was just really how much, not necessarily agreement, because there was definitely different opinions out there, but kind of just general consensus and moving forward together as a state. So, it was a really encouraging conference, I think.
Yeah. Now, what did you learn from this one that will change how you plan the next one? Are there certain themes that emerged, or do you focus, do you just let the same topics be talked about? Or
when you look at our agendas kind of from the last few years, there's some basics that will always be covered, like diesel engine efficiency.
Okay.
We look at transmission. We usually do a session on each of the major technologies. Like there's usually a wind session and a geothermal session. So those are kind of the core that will always be there. But again, some of these other, I guess they're not really electives, but you know, some of the extra sessions, they do shift and change. And you know, the things that we think about right now in 18 months, there may be totally different topics. And so one of the interesting ones that I really liked this time was we focused on looking at energy as a key component to community health, looking at the importance of it for water and sewage and health and medical issues, and how if energy fails, all of those issues also magnify and become a problem, and how each of those systems also impact energy use in the community. So it was really neat to start looking at energy as part of a larger system, where we've really just looked at it more as components and small solutions on power generation or end use efficiency, but to start thinking about it as a system, start talking to other folks that were thinking about it as a system. That's really where we can gain some traction as far as funding and things. When you, instead of little piecemeal projects in a community, looking at a community as a system and being more integrative in our solutions.
Yeah.
So
that was the only session I attended. I didn't get much time because we had our booth, and so today I was like, since my background is sustainability and social issues, I'm like, this one looks really interesting.
So what do you think?
It was great, and at the end, it was funny. I was joking with the guys recording it because we called it the poop session because there was a guy that had toilets. He was highlighting these amazing toilets for Bush communities, and everybody from the Bush that was there wanted to know about how they could get one of these cool toilets from Sweden.
Yeah.
So I mean, but the health component was interesting. I mean, we saw the food issue with USDA. State Executive Director was there talking about food and growing our own food and the energy needed. And when energy costs go up, people buy less food and then they buy junk food. And so that's just...
It's really interesting how much of... It really is just a system. And I think because of the way things are funded and because of the way expertise is, we tend to look at these things in silos. And so that's what I was really excited about is really the conference was really starting to look at the communities. And it was actually the session chair, Jack Hebert from Cool Climate Housing Research Center.
Mm-hmm.
They are starting an initiative called Sustainable Communities and looking at the options not only in the building science and end use, which is what they focus on, but let's talk about what this community needs and how this decision to put in this new school or this new sewage system is going to impact energy needs and use. And, it's really fascinating and complex, and it makes my head hurt sometimes. But it's good to start working through those problems.
It is, and to think a little bit bigger on that.
Yeah.
Now, last question. I guess we're running out of time, but I saw on your website something about Alaska Energy Wiki, or I guess maybe there's a bunch of different cool websites that maybe we could promote.
Absolutely. The wiki is something that we've been putting a lot of time into, and really what that is a site that is kind of the constant up-to-date information about certain technologies, certain projects going on. And so you can get to that through our website.
Yeah.
There's also an energy network, AlaskaEnergyNetwork.org, that also allows folks who are just curious about something,
yeah,
ask experts or experts to communicate about topics. And so it's kind of a new adding social networking into the energy sector, which we'll see how that goes.
It's a new experiment.
It's a little wild and crazy for us.
An emerging technology. Social media.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come on,
Julie.
Yeah,
this was great. And thanks for hosting us, Juno. You've been fabulous. And we really want to thank everybody who's welcomed us here and invited us here. It's been a great community to have this conference in. So thanks.
Yeah. And good luck with the next one in 18 months.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Julie Estee. She is the business director for the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, who organized the Alaska Rural Energy Conference this week in Juneau. This is Adrian Lopez on the Alaska Identity Project. We'll be back next week, so stay tuned, and thanks for listening tonight.